Well, hello, this is Clyde Lear, and I have with me Greg Brown and Roger Gardner. And we're going to talk a little bit about the olden times. Now, Roger's right here in the studio. Greg, as you might guess, is in a hotel somewhere. But that won't make any difference. We're going to be able to
That's how I would have guessed it.
Yeah, through the buzz. The first question I want to kind of throw out, guys, and it'll help our listeners kind of get a little bit of a feel for you. When you joined us back forever ago, how old were you? What brought you to Learfield? How did you get here? And we might see, Roger, you were first here, I think. So tell us a little bit about that, would you?
Well, I was 20.
Ooh.
And, yeah. And I was a junior at Mizzou. So my first couple of years were part-time. And I was doing farm reports. That's what I was initially hired to do. And it was kind of fill-in work. I'd had some experience in radio, working at a small station in my hometown growing up. And then I also had a connection through FFA to Derry Brownfield. And so he was aware of me, and I was aware of him. And it was at a point for him where he was out doing a lot of speaking around the Midwest, particularly in Illinois and Iowa. And that would require, you know, it was usually a banquet thing at night. And so he would be coming back either late at night or the next morning. And so he preferred to have somebody else do the early morning market so that either he didn't have to hurry back or he didn't have to drive all night to get back in time for those reports. And so there were a couple of us, another fellow that was in school at Mizzou as well, David Pierce. And we sort of shared those duties.
Would that be Senator David Pierce?
It would be.
Yes. So the Missouri General Assembly.
Mm-hmm. And so we would basically come down to Centertown, where the studios, the farm studios were at the time, and spend the night. There was a, you know, a fold-out sofa bed thing there, and we would come down the night before, spend the night. You know, it all seemed so... so innocent and appropriate at the time, but now that I re-say it, it sounds pretty stupid.
I've got this picture.
It's a bad picture. So we would, you know, get up early, do the farm reports, and could be back in Columbia at the university at Mizzou by, you know, 8 o'clock, 8:15 or something. So it really worked pretty well. And then through the summer, I worked part-time, and then afterwards began full-time work after I graduated.
And, of course, my intention was that you would someday be the replacement for Derry Brownfield and have a career as a farm broadcaster. That didn't happen.
Wouldn't that have been fun?
That would have been different. And actually, you know, at the time, I didn't have any reason to believe that that wouldn't probably be kind of what I'd be doing for a long time, too. But it sort of changed when... I got into the business and was actually more fascinated with the business than the being on the air. And so the interest really kind of changed. And it, at least the things I was interested in, it seemed to me like the people that were out doing the business, making the business operate, were having more fun than the
farm broadcasters.
Than the farm broadcasters were at the time.
I don't think that's changed. All right, your turn, Greg. How did you get on with us?
Well, my story is not nearly as interesting and entertaining.
But does it involve a sofa bed?
It did. Well, actually, it did.
Come to think of it.
You may recall. That's another story. I was working for then Attorney General John Ashcroft in Jefferson City and was a gopher, an intern, driving him around the country and mostly around the state of Missouri as he was running for governor. And I was recruited... to go to Des Moines and sell for the Iowa State Cyclone Network. At the time, we had just gotten the radio rights. And I was recruited in, from a timing standpoint, in December, and then finally accepted, I think, maybe sometime in February of 1984, and then started on February 20th of 84 and began trying to sell Iowa State Radio. And at the time, I was living in Jefferson City, but then we opened up an office up in Des Moines, West Des Moines, Iowa, on April 1st of 1984. And Roger and I moved up there, which Roger hadn't mentioned yet because he was embarrassed about it. But so while Roger was, you know, studying and qualified to do what he was doing, I must admit that I was not qualified, nor was I studying to do what I eventually ended up doing. So I was totally unqualified to do anything I was being recruited for. But nonetheless, I was recruited. So I knew how to get to Des Moines, and that was my...
So you never did work for the magazine?
For the magazine?
Right.
No, I never worked for the magazine. The magazine was...
But that was about the same time.
It was about, well, you know what? I think it was... I think we were just in 83.
We were closing it down.
Getting
right.
rid of it
right.
at the time. And when I came on board, we had... No, we were... I think we were out of that or
yeah,
had just
yeah,
gotten out
sure
of it.
Too. Yeah.
And so I didn't start actually till February of 84.
Well, tell us when you a little bit about the John Ashcroft things, because I've heard you talk about driving Ashcroft around.
Yeah, you know, it was... originally, it was planned to be an internship and was recruited there. I had been... we'd gotten acquainted with John Ashcroft, who was inducted into our fraternity as an honorary member, and I got acquainted with his chief of staff when I was a college student, and had picked him up at the airport when he was on campus at the school that I went to, which is now called Truman State, then Northeast Missouri State. Got acquainted with his chief of staff, a guy by the name of Duncan Kinchlow, and sort of suggested to Duncan when I took him to the airport in Kirksville, Missouri, one day that I'd love to go work for we're the AG at some point. We had a kind of a pipeline developed that, from the school that I was going to his office of, and particularly actually from the fraternity I was in, to his office. And so Duncan encouraged me to follow up with him at a later time, and I did. And was recruited to go down and work for John when he was running for governor. I thought that was big stuff at the time, and it was fun, you know, for a 21-year-old kid to, or I guess then maybe 22, to drive the guy around that you thought was going to be governor. He'd travel around the state, and he'd sing gospel songs. You know, at the end of the day, at the end of a fundraising day or a campaigning day, he'd... crawl in the back of a station wagon that we'd always have. He always wanted station wagons for his tour vehicle, so that at the end of the day he could lay all the seats down in the back of the station wagon and grab a pillow and change into some jeans and cowboy boots and travel around the state. And we'd try and get him back home. He always liked to be sleeping in his own bed if he could. And he'd lay the seats down and he'd give me a tape of gospel. Usually it was just the musical part of the gospel song. He'd do the vocal, and he'd tap me on the shoulder every now and then and encourage me to sing along. And I maybe knew a couple of the songs.
Kumbaya.
Kumbaya. I could do that one. But not mostly not second verses.
You know. Well, that's just because you weren't using your God-given potential.
I wasn't. But you know what? I had a great time doing that, and he's a great guy, and I enjoyed it very much. But I was recruited out of that office and to go to work at then, actually, I don't even know, did we call it Learfield back then? I think it was still Missouri Network.
Still the Missouri Net. But the, now, as I understand it, you really hadn't graduated yet. Now, you didn't purposefully lie to us, did you?
No. I was never asked the question, exactly.
Oh.
And so I was never put in a position to have to answer the question because the guy that was recruiting me knew exactly where I was in my college tenure, and I didn't technically have my college degree. And in fact, the work truly was an internship in John's office. So when I came to work at Learfield, I was still serving as an intern back.
Whoa. You had two jobs at the same time?
I technically had two jobs at the same time. So
you were a conniver back in those days.
Nonetheless, I had two things that I was sort of involved in, but it was fun. You know, it was. I figured if I didn't do this thing, that I would never get a real paycheck, and so I thought I better go do this while I had the opportunity, and it worked out.
Well, we did this video a few weeks ago of you moving from one place to another to another to another, and
a video.
Well, actually, it was done in '94.
Oh.
But it reflected your many, many moves. And
there were a few.
That's on YouTube, and we would direct our listeners to go to YouTube and pull that up.
I don't think I've seen it.
Or not.
I'm afraid to look.
It is really, really very interesting. Well, now you guys have been with our company a long time. That would be 24 years for you, Greg. And
20, yeah, at the end of, actually it's 25 February 20. So,
but who's keeping track?
At 12:30.
And so it'd be
Roger's
more than
like 35.
So Roger, you're 26 years or something like that.
27. Maybe.
It's 27. So, well, what is it? I mean, that's a long time at one company. Can't you get a job anywhere else, or why are you guys still here?
That's a fair question. I think we're I'm highly unemployable, so I know the answer to mine. I don't know about Roger. Yes. He could go do a lot of stuff. But
I tried to fire you once.
Yeah, that's
actually
happened.
Actually I did fire you
did
once.
You did fire me once.
And but you talked me out of it, as I remember. You want to tell that story?
Yeah. Do you want me to tell that story?
Yes.
Why?
Why?
Yeah. Why would you tell that story? I can't remember the year, but I'll do a quick summary of that story. I was in Dallas. This is the first time I lived there, and the project that I was engaged in was not working out so well. It was mostly a bunch of Southwest Conference schools, and it was back in the radio only days, and we'd done some expansion that was probably imprudent. Not only probably, it was imprudent. And had a guy that was sort of a mercenary recruiter for business development, got a bunch of stuff. Although we were blessing those things that were coming down the pike, we got a bunch of businesses that, frankly, we shouldn't have been involved in. And it was a business that I was overseeing and responsible ultimately for, although I had a boss that was very active in my business every day. And so I was, the business wasn't working. And so the gentleman who was my boss, I think maybe had encouraged Clyde to come down and dispose of me, dispatch me to some other business, to some other company to get rid of me. And so on that day, I can't remember what year that was. Was it 90 or 91? I think it was 91. Anyway, we had set up a meeting, and Clyde came to town, and I was a little suspicious when he didn't ask me to actually come to the airport and pick him up, which was usually the protocol, and instead he was going to have his own car, which I thought, well, that's interesting.
And security detail.
He didn't want a driver this time. I'm surprised. Wonder if there must be something stewing, and there was. So prior to
lunch, the words of the president, you misunderestimated him.
prior to lunch, Clyde came in and told me that we didn't need a manager down there anymore, and that we needed somebody to sell, and I wasn't a sales guy anymore. Well, I was selling. I wasn't a full-time sales guy. I was managing and selling. And we had two other salespeople, and he said, "We're going to eliminate your position, and we're going to have a seller or two down here who could just go out and sell and report back to corporate, and that's all we needed." And so we started talking about it, and I said, "Well, that's interesting. Let me kind of think about that." Well, I mean, honestly, it wasn't a heated discussion. It was one of those things where I didn't see the resolve in Clyde about really doing that. And I went to lunch with my wife at the time, and she's still my wife, but at that time I went to lunch with my wife, and that was the first martini I ever sampled at that point. And she didn't drink martinis, but I did. And
four later, you decided you liked them.
I did. I actually developed a taste for them, and so I had a martini. And I might have sampled a second one, and I came back to work, and at that point I said, you know what? This whole sales thing, I'm pretty good at. I've done that a long time, and I could do it again. And I could just go ahead and sell, and maybe we'll eliminate these other two positions, and I'll just take a sales list and move on down the road. And candidly, it wasn't about 90 seconds of that. Clyde said, "That sounds like a good idea. Let's do that." And he got back in his car and drove back to Jefferson City and reported that he had not fired me. And because I don't think they even had cell phones, or at least we didn't at that time. Everybody didn't have them. So he reported when he got back, and I think my boss at the time was disappointed. So I stayed on, and by the hair of my chinny chin chin, and I'm still here. So like a bad penny. But anyway, I've stayed. You asked the question. I'll let Roger report on his. I've stayed because I love what I do. Every day I get out of bed, I still think about how fortunate I am to be involved in doing something I care so much about and be with some people that I care so much about. And there are lots of things people can go do, and there are very few that people can go do that they care so much about. And I've just been very blessed and fortunate to be in a place where that's been the case for me. And I don't think there's anything else that would keep me committed for as long as I've been committed and involved for as long as I've been involved. It's just fun to do. You know, we serve a lot of great people in our organization, and we have lots of great client relationships and school relationships, and we're spoiled, and I'm spoiled, and I actually get to make a living doing what I love, and I don't think there's any other answer to the question for me than that.
Hmm, great.
Yeah, I would echo that, and you combo that up with the being unqualified for anything else, and you've got a winning combination. No, I think that's I would agree with all Greg said, and I think then when you add in the people to the fact that we get to work in a business that is very exciting, it is sort of a once in a lifetime kind of, you know, sort of dream deal, and fortunately it's continued for a long time.
Mm. Well, thank you, guys. I just wanted to get a flavor of a little bit about what you are and why you're here. And
you didn't ask us, Clyde, I might add. The strangest thing some of the strangest stories we had from our time at Iowa State, which we could comment on, but I guess
that's all right. Give us one.
Probably people. This lady, I wrote this, and you never wrote it on the blog, so I'll comment on it. This lady by the name of Irene Furtwängler was this lady that ran this office that Roger and I officed out of when we first started. She was about 4'11", and she had a stack of hair that was about 3 foot tall on top of her head, so she was an extra 2 or 3 feet. She had this beehive dude that was just hilarious, and this lady walked around and manned the office. It was this, I mean, we just had a hoot of a time in this first office that we opened at Iowa State.
This was some sort of what kind of office was this?
We had
condo offices.
This was another quick side story. When I was dispatched to go find an office and Roger wasn't yet up in Des Moines, I was told to get an office no bigger than the boss that I had at the time, for both of us, mind you, and it couldn't have any windows. And so, I didn't know what I was looking for. The only thing I'd lived in was a fraternity house. So I went and found this office above this Chinese restaurant in West Des Moines, and where I met my friend and Roger's friend, Irene Furtwängler. And we put this little office above this Chinese restaurant in West Des Moines, and it was about a 12 by 14 office. And so we had to take turns speaking, and we also had on the phone, and we had to take turns, you know, one from the other in terms of like backing up from our desks so we didn't bump into each other. So, but we had a great time doing that. It was a very interesting experience for a lot of reasons, but we were young single guys at the time and had a great time doing that. It was more fun. So anyway.
Well, the speaking part on the phone was humorous to watch, but according to most people, we only, you know, tended to use our brain one at a time anyway. So that all worked out. The timing actually worked out pretty well.
One brain between.
Pretty much, yeah. And so it was, but you were really close together, and we had these ridiculously enormous desks. We don't know why they were so big.
Because Jim Lipsy got them.
Jim got them. Big steel case desks, which were about 7 feet by 7 feet. And so I'm not even sure how we got them through the door, but when you would back the two desks, the chairs up, when you would back up from the desk, you would hit each other. And so when we were on the phone, it was a little bit of a competition to see who could get the loudest.
But Irene kept Roger in line. She really liked Roger. She was very fond of him.
I have no idea where you're going with that. But all I know is we didn't have a sofa bed in the office.
It was more fun, though. It was a simple life, wasn't it?
It was.
Well, you all did a good job. You know, that property did well, and we also had, about the same time, we had Kansas
right.
and Oklahoma State. And so we were trying to grow our business, and
that's when King Bob was hired. You know, there's another side story. King Bob was offered the very job that I took in Des Moines, and had King Bob been accepted that job, which he didn't, I would have never been hired, because I wouldn't qualified to find my way to Oklahoma like he was. So,
you all did a good job up in Iowa. You really did. You built that network. I don't think our listeners understand. The Iowa State did not have a radio network. And
of course, this show doesn't either.
And Iowa,
it has no audience.
Iowa had such a dominating presence in the state of Iowa that it was an uphill fight, and we've done a great job for that
problem. That was Roger's good work, because he was the operations guy who was in charge of affiliate relations, and he went out and signed up all the stations, and he shepherded that business. So.
Well, we did have a good time, and I put these notes in to Clyde that I thought there was an aspect of this that I think continues to be important today, that people who come on board with the company, especially earlier in their career, it's cool when they can have an opportunity to do something that is entirely theirs, and they get to have the experience of that responsibility and hopefully that success, because those things are very formative in nature, and they really kind of, you know, set the course for how somebody does later on.
So how old were you when you were in Iowa?
Well, 20 when
Wow.
Turned 23 that fall, so it was very early.
Well, you guys mean a great deal to us. Really, in large part, are really running our business today, and I thank you, and I know all those who get to work with you each day, they love you to death, and you've done a super job. So we're all indebted to you greatly. Thank you very much for listening.